almost instantaneously being passed along for chemical processing into proteins and other organic products. This energy transfer occurs almost instantaneously and with 100% efficiency. No energy is wasted as heat. By comparison, if you go out for a morning run, your body's efficiency at burning fuel leads to a lot of excess heat as you sweat and your skin gets warm. There is also much chemical waste that must be carried away from your muscles in the bloodstream. Chemistry couldn't explain the near-perfect precision of photosynthesis. In 2007, a breakthrough was made at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory by Gregory Engel, Graham Fleming, and colleagues, who came up with the quantum mechanical explanation. We've already covered that photons can behave like either waves or particles. The instant a photon makes contact with the electrons orbiting in an atom, the wave collapses into a particle. This should lead to a lot of inefficiency in photosynthesis. Like shooting darts at a board, there will be a lot of misses before the bullseye is hit. But the Berkeley team discovered something quite unique. In photosynthesis, sunlight retains its wave-like state long enough to sample the whole range of possible targets, while simultaneously choosing which one is the most efficient to connect with. By looking down all the possible energy pathways on offer, the light won't waste energy picking any but the most efficient ones. The details of the Berkeley findings are complex, centering on long-term quantum coherence, which means the ability of the wave to remain a wave without collapsing into a particle. The mechanism involves matching the resonance of both the light and the molecules receiving its energy. Think of two tuning forks vibrating exactly alike. This is known as harmonic resonance. At the quantum level, there is a similar harmony between the oscillations of certain frequencies of sunlight and the oscillations that the receiving cells are tuned to. Quantum effects are known to exist in other key places where micro meets macro. Hearing is stimulated in the inner ear by oscillations that are quantum in scale, being smaller than a nanometer. That is, a billionth of a meter. The nervous systems of some fish are sensitive to very small electric fields, and our own nervous system generates very tiny electromagnetic effects. The exchange of potassium and sodium ions across the membrane of each brain cell gives rise to the electrical signals transmitted by the cell. An entire new theory posits that living things are embedded in a biofield that originates at the electromagnetic level, or perhaps at an even subtler quantum level, yet to be explored. As you can see, quantum biology has a real future. The breakthrough with photosynthesis was a turning point. Yet, as intriguing as all of these discoveries are, declaring that quanta are alive won't tell us how they acquired life. The snake just winds up biting its tail again. If human beings are alive because quanta behave in a totally lifelike way, that is, making choices, balancing stability and spontaneity, efficiently harvesting energy, and so on, all we've proved is that life comes from life. This is something we already knew. Quantum effects in biology are important, nevertheless, because they introduce behavior that isn't predetermined the way oxygen atoms are when reacting with other atoms. A word like choice implies that determinism has been loosened up a bit. But is this enough? As green leaves flutter in the trees, sunlight is used to build a carbohydrate, thanks to a quantum decision. Yet this isn't enough to tell us about the decisions being made up the line, where a single liver cell performs dozens of processes in coordinated fashion with trillions of other cells. In building a house, knowing how to mortar each brick is important, but it's not the same as designing and constructing the whole house. Getting from how to why. With science stymied to explain how life originated, Maybe we've been asking the wrong question. If someone throws a brick through your window at midnight, you can't see who did it in the dark. But that's secondary to asking why they did it. Clearly, our lives have purpose, while nature, we are told, has no purpose. It just is. Being without purpose brings no sleepless nights to quarks, atoms, stars, and galaxies. Why go off on a tangent and create living organisms that are driven by food, mating, and other reasons to be alive? We believe that the absence of purpose is inconceivable. As long as you are human, A leads to B for a reason. There is no other way to use the brain. Without purpose, no events exist, at least not as perceived through a human nervous system. Let's say that you've been marooned on a desert island for 60 years. One day, out of the sky, a package parachutes to Earth, and when you open it, there are two objects inside, a smartphone and a desktop computer. Both run on batteries. It wouldn't take you long to figure out that the smartphone, even though it looks nothing like the telephones you knew from the 1960s, works as a telephone. Because you know why it exists, you have a fairly easy path to using it. You wouldn't need to know how the smartphone worked once you made the connection between punching in numbers and hearing a voice answer at the other end. But the computer is another story, because in the world you left behind around 1965, computers were in their infancy. And nothing about a desktop computer looks like the massive IBM mainframes you saw on television. Fiddling around, you would need hundreds of hours to figure out, by hit and miss, what you're dealing with. This strange machine isn't the same as a typewriter or a television, even though it has both a keyboard and a screen. Let's say you are mechanically inclined, and you are able to open up the inner workings of the computer. Inside, you see a wealth of parts that make no sense to you. Is it conceivable that on your own, you could grasp how a microchip works? Even if you did, would that information tell you how to run the computer's software? The answer is most likely to be no on all counts. Unless you know why a computer exists, the same way you know why a telephone exists, taking apart the machinery won't get you from how to why. Many airline passengers don't know how an airplane manages to fly, but they get on board because they need to travel somewhere. The why of the airplane is enough. A plane exists to take you places faster than a car or train. So why does life exist? It certainly doesn't need to. All of the chemical components and quantum processes that interact to create life were sufficient on their own already. Like Frankenstein's monster being jolted with electricity from a lightning storm, it would be very helpful if some basic physical trigger, the spark of life, automatically made life happen. But no such trigger exists. Looking out over the vast panorama of living organisms, we are stuck with the undeniable fact that life always comes from life, not from dead matter. Even in laboratories where new forms of bacteria are being engineered, so-called artificial life is still a recombination of DNA being sliced and diced. If the manufacturer wants to design a specific microorganism that feeds on petroleum, which would be very useful in cleaning up oil spills at sea, devising this new life form has a chance of success only by working from pre-existing organisms that feed off oil in some form. Without a goal in mind, tinkering around with DNA basically goes nowhere. Nature, however, wasn't so lucky. It had to build living organisms blindly, without knowing in advance what needed to be built. Nature wouldn't even know if it made a mistake along the way. Because unless you know where you're going, no choice is right or wrong. Billions of years ago, oxygen atoms had no inkling that life was around the bend. No one told them that sunlight was going to be harvested, or that they'd be necessary in organic chemistry. Life brought about huge adaptations on our planet. And yet oxygen atoms don't adapt. Most scientists would shrug their shoulders and insist that blind nature created life through automatic deterministic processes. The bonding of atoms leads to simple molecules. The bonding of simple molecules leads to more complex molecules. When these molecules are complex enough, life appears. As far as mainstream science is concerned, this wholly unsatisfactory story is basically all there is. To arrive at a better story, we must explain why life was needed in a system, planet Earth, that was perfectly sufficient without it. Knowing the how isn't useless. We're not claiming that. But imagine that you want to buy a house. You go to the bank, and the loan officer presents you with a stack of papers to fill out. He explains that each piece of paper is necessary. You can't skip any. And if your application is found wanting at any step of the way, the deal collapses. Millions of people have gritted their teeth and filled out every piece of paper for one and only one reason. They want a house. Having a goal in mind, they are willing to endure the necessary steps to get there. Nature had to go through thousands of linked steps in order to produce living organisms. Do we really buy the story that this happened without a goal? It's as if a customer came into the bank, filled out dozens of forms at random, and one day was told, "You own a house. We know you didn't come in for one, and you had no idea what those pieces of paper were for." Now we know what is lacking if we want to understand where life came from. Without a why, the whole project is too incredible ever to happen. Knowing that life is the goal, rather than having to rely on random change, would make everything 1,000 times easier to explain. But suddenly a new mystery has opened up. If life was part of the cosmos from the start, what about mind? At the instant of the Big Bang, was the human mind inevitable? The reason we are forced to ask it is simple. Unless the universe is mindful, it's impossible to create mind out of a mindless creation. As Sherlock Holmes liked to remind Watson, once you've eliminated every other possible solution, the one that remains must be true. In this case, a universe that is thinking all the time sounds incredible, but every other answer, as we will see, turns out to be wrong. Does the brain create the mind? Before the universe can have a mind, we need to understand our own minds. That's logical enough. We cannot see reality through the minds of dolphins and elephants, even though both species have outsized brains that could be functioning at a very high level. Almost certainly, there is a dolphin reality and an elephant reality, tailor-made to fit their nervous system. Dolphins have been shown to learn words, giving them a close affinity to humans. And also, like humans, they are capable of savage acts. Still, they are not humans, inhabiting a reality beyond ours. This logic leads to a surprising conclusion. A universe is defined by the creatures who inhabit it. What humans call the universe is like taking two bananas, a sack of flour, and a frozen pizza home, and claiming that you bought out the supermarket. Any reality, as perceived through a different nervous system, implies a different universe, so that dolphins and elephants inhabit their own, which to them is the universe. And why stop with them? Why not a snail universe or a giant panda universe? Humans didn't take out an exclusive deed on reality. We just assume we did, perhaps out of our self-inflicted sense of superiority. The reason we made that assumption is pride of the brain. With its quadrillion possible combinations, the human brain is the most complex object in the universe, so far as we know. Thanks to its activity, we are self-aware. A horse eats grass and is content. We eat spinach and can say, I don't like this, or I love this, along with any opinion in between. This implies enormous control over our thoughts. Pride of the brain lies behind all of science, too. Since our brain has a mysterious capacity for logic and reason, the newest abilities early man acquired, brain-wise, when the cerebral cortex evolved, not in terms of millions of years like the lower brain, but perhaps tens of thousands. Pride of the brain is seriously humbled, however, when we look more closely. First of all, science, at least classical physics, is in love with predictability. But our minds aren't. One of the easiest bets to win is to offer $1 million to anyone who can accurately predict their next thought. It would be foolhardy to accept such a wager. As we all experience every day, our thoughts are unpredictable and spontaneous. They come and go at will. And strangely enough, we have no model for how this works. The brain is supposedly a machine for thinking. But what kind of machine churns out so many different responses to the same input? It's like the world's most dysfunctional candy machine. You put in a nickel, but instead of getting a gumball every time, the machine spits out a poem or a delusion, a new idea or a trite cliché, occasionally a great insight or a bizarre conspiracy theory. One theory of mind and brain actually does recognize the unpredictability of thought and links it to the quantum realm. Roger Penrose, working in collaboration with anesthesiologist Stuart Hameroff, departed from the conventional notion that consciousness is produced by activity occurring in the synapses, the gaps between brain cells. Their theory, known as orchestrated objective reduction, ORC, looked instead to quantum processes that happen inside the neuron. In other words, the reduction in ORC's title is drastic, examining much finer fabrics of nature than chemical reactions. In a microscopic structure of cells known as microtubules, Penrose and Hameroff proposed that unpredictable activity at the quantum level is the origin of events happening in consciousness. Mind needs the quantum to exist. The other two words in the